Catholic Horror!
Hello, and welcome to the Saladcast on Sunday, July the 28th, 2024. I'm your host, Dan Train. Joining me today, Zachary Burgess.
Here comes the heat.
And Robert Kemp.
Like an apple pie.
Although, once again, it's only like 23 degrees at the moment.
what is going on? Well, it's 26, apparently.
Apparently.
Yeah.
I mean, in here, it probably is at least.
No, in here, it's definitely warmer.
Yep. Yeah.
But it's well close. Like,
it's, yeah.
Glenn close.
Close.
Exactly.
Get right up in your grill and say it's hot, but. I mean, it probably would be hotter if a whole bunch of people just got right up in your face and just kept saying, it's hot, it's hot, it's hot.
Probably. Yeah.
That'd probably make you quite uncomfortable and quite warm.
Basically going on the tube.
Yeah. God. Possibly my least favourite thing in the world, the tube in summer.
It's definitely true that some lines are worse than others, though. That's what you learn when you get it. Like, Central Line is the worst, probably. Northern Line, close second.
I mean, I'm sure I've talked about it on the podcast before, but it actually makes... I'm not really a claustrophobic, not super claustrophobic, but the tube really triggers me.
Yeah, understandable.
Well, hot tube. I'm not even too bad with busy tube, like if it's reasonable temperature, like just hot tube.
It's the hotness of it. Do you know that apparently it's changed over the years, right? And there are posters from like the 1920s saying you can cool down underground by using the tube, because at the time it was true. Because,
oh really?
Like, yeah, but what's happened is that all of the earth around the tunnels has since dried out. So originally it was obviously kind of makes sense if you're in a tunnel right in the wet earth, whenever it's going to be cooler, but no, it's since over the 100 years of operation is totally dried out,
and because of all the pavement above.
Like, well, no, I think no because moisture of the trains passing through, maybe, and the heat of the trains and and the braking or whatever.
And the air conditioning, basically sucking all the moisture out of it.
Mm. Yeah. Anyway, so supposedly it used to be cool down there, but it's not anymore.
Interesting.
And you can't fix that.
I mean, could you...
Fill it with water for a weekend.
Yeah.
Use it as a sewer over the weekend.
It's time for a tactical flooding of one of the lines.
Yeah. But you'd have to get the moisture outside the tunnel, which you can't access because it's like lined right with metal or concrete.
Not
in the
over
newer
a
ones.
Not over a couple of days, over 100 years again. Yeah. But apparently not the other way.
Yeah,
you just put little. I guess, yeah, they just need.
I'm sure if there was an engineering way to fix it, they probably thought of it now.
You just put little like rods with tiny little holes. Yeah, like perforated rods, like in the ground around it, so they irrigate the dirt around the tunnel,
right, for the entire length of the
deep
level tube. Yeah,
I wonder if that is more or less expensive than running the air conditioning.
Well, that's the thing, is like it doesn't really have the deep level, like 1900s tube or whatever. It doesn't really have aircon, where it just relies on the trains basically pushing the air through the tunnels and doesn't actually have mechanical, and you can't really put full-blown aircon on the trains because there's nowhere for the heat to go.
Well, you just need a really long vent, surely.
Yeah, exactly. I think there is some mechanical ventilation of the deep level tube, but that's why they have aircon on the sub-level ones, but not on the deep level ones. But apparently the new tube trains coming to Piccadilly Line next year have some form of aircon, so very much looking forward to that.
But that's just going to spit it back out into the line, right? And make everything
hotter.
I know,
but they must have thought of something.
Do they capture the hot, its own hot air?
Well,
somehow?
I mean, that's what I would have imagined, but that seems dumb. Do they like a hot box, right? Where you just, it's like you have the refrigerator, except the inside is hot. So you're putting all the heat into this one containment unit.
Are they going to start putting buffet cars?
No,
on tube trains, and they're going to use that to cook some meals or something.
Because then the heat comes back out. That doesn't actually help.
Can they feed the heat from the aircon into some kind of turbine?
Yeah, and make a bit of power. Second law of thermodynamics problem, isn't it? Where it's the wrong temperature. You've got plenty of heat, but it's not. You haven't got enough temperature gradient to power anything.
Just force everyone on the train to drink only tea, and then the hot goes inside them.
Clever.
That doesn't help. But then you can you just store it all up and then do little bursts of like power generation from this hot?
Know.
No, that's not how that works. I mean, if you can store the heat and then like
just turn it into battery power somehow. That's what I mean, because then you're literally storing the energy.
No, you can't reuse energy that's that shitty.
That's the second law of thermodynamics, yeah. The Zachary statement of the second law. you can't reuse energy that's that shitty.
Like recycling paper, basically.
Somebody, this is unrelated, but I was at a party yesterday and somebody said that, what did they say? Tradition is just peer pressure from dead people. I was like, that's good. That's a nice way of putting it.
Yep, it's accurate.
Oh, no.
I'm still not sure I fully understand. Oh, no. But like, yeah.
Anyway, once they introduce those trades, I'll report back if they're actually any cooler.
Well, you'll have to also try and like, if you can. I mean, you probably won't be able to tell, but like, if you can see any kind of hint of the mechanics of it, like, what are they doing to get this heat to go away somehow?
Well, presumably you won't be able to. It'll be part of the train, but I don't think they're changing the engineering, the line initially, apart from apparently they're like shaving some of the edges of the platforms to fit the train on or whatever.
Right.
But I think eventually they will start adding those platform screen doors like they have on the Jubilee line and the Elizabeth line, but not initially. It's just the trains are changing. I don't know why they're so expensive. Why is it such a big deal to add those doors on the platforms, on all the platforms? But,
because I guess they all have to be super custom made because every platform is different.
Yeah, I guess so. And you have to do it while it's operating at maximum capacity.
Well, not at maximum capacity. I'm sure you can find a slightly more quiet time to do that kind of work.
Well, it's closed overnight.
Yeah, overnight. You have to do everything within those overnight periods. And it's not always closed overnight these days. There is a night tube now.
I was talking to my friend JJ yesterday about his fight with, so speaking about doing jobs overnight, about his fight with PlayStation customer service.
Right.
Regarding their new login system, which didn't work for him. Like they have like this like pass key thing you can now do via the app instead of the classic password and MFA approach.
Right. Yeah.
But it totally broke, basically. I mean, he couldn't get access to his account, so he was fine. But their customer services department stops at 5 p.m.
5 p.m.?
So, like, people who are working can't ring Sony customer services.
Clever.
Yeah. Well smart.
I guess that does at least imply that the center is in England.
Yeah, I guess.
Or in
GMT
time zone, at least.
See what I did there? It's a podcast about video games.
I don't know why you're trying to move on to that topic already, because we haven't got fucking news.
No, I just saw a segue subtly, and I thought, yeah, we go. We can. Okay.
How did that work? I mean, we're of an age where we remember certain things about the old pre-internet world, but like, it was always weird that like, in order to do banking, you had to physically go to the bank, and it was only open when you're at work. So how the hell did that used to work? Everyone went in there. Lunch hour, did they?
Weekends, I guess.
I remember queuing at the bank. That's like a cliche, queuing at the bank, right? And fiddling around with those pens that are attached to the thing and a metal chain and all that shit.
Yep.
But like, why?
I mean, it sort of is still a thing. Like, I've definitely, on the very rare occasion I've had to go in and talk to someone, like, you I don't know if it's the same everywhere, but in the case of like HSBC in Ipswich, I shouldn't give away what bank I use, but there you go. you just sort of walk and stand in the lobby. You just sort of hover in the lobby for a bit.
Someone's going to help you.
Yeah, and there's an implied queuing there, but it really is just in the middle of the floor. There's no specialized. There is like a queue at the very, very back if you know what you're getting up to, right? If you know what you're going to be doing. Like, I've got the form to fill in and da-da-da-da. Yeah. But if I need to actually like see seek help about what I should do or something like that, then you just hover around and hope someone comes to you. It's really,
think someone's going to help you.
Yeah. It's really weird.
Yeah, it's super weird.
Oh, good. Thank you, hovering hostess lady. You can describe that, job. It's customer services, but you're a floating service agent without anti-gravity.
Yeah, what even is that job? Because you're not like a cashier, like traditionally behind the desk at a bank. You're like a
you're not even really
random
a banker
floor person.
Yeah,
yeah.
I suppose it is. Yeah, service representative probably. How odd. I'm sure I've been a Barclays in the past as well, and they have a slightly even. I don't know if you've been to the big Barclays in Ipswich, but they've got they have an even bigger floor space inside with some weird glowing blue donut hanging from the ceiling, and I'm completely lost. I'm out of my depth. I think when I walk in that building, I'm just like,
I think it's designed deliberately to make people feel that way. It's architected to make people be like, oh, I'll just go home.
Yeah, I don't feel right here. I don't belong. The finance, it scares me.
You'd think there'd be more, my bank is Barclays or whatever, and you'd think there'd be more options for me to go into, but no, even in London, all the branches are all closed, right? So you have to go to, the biggest one you can find, basically. There's one in the city, by Liverpool Street Station. That's the only one I know to go to now, because the one in Highbury and Islington, I just noticed, turned into, a organic food supermarket thing.
Ah, classic London.
Yeah.
At least they weren't trying to sell you a bowl of cereal for a fiver.
I don't know. I haven't been in there. They were doing that in Brick Lane, right, for a while. Although I've heard that did actually close.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
I mean, you only need to run it for a while, right? Make an absolute fortune off cereal and then...
Right. Piss then, off the local community massively.
And then disappear.
Yeah.
Go buy a house in a cheaper part of the country.
Yeah.
How absurd. I didn't hear of any I don't suppose any of those small payment providers went down, right? SumUp and that lot, because then all these little indie shops all are in trouble.
What you mean in the IT outage?
Yes, in the CrowdStrike disaster of 2024.
They weren't CrowdStruck.
I was vaguely impressed, actually, with the NHS in particular, because they obviously had outages, because of course the NHS for some reason happened to use this system that failed. Of course it did. They seem to have every possible system under the sun, right? So one of them is going to fail always. But they did actually manage to sort of, my parents had a few things to deal with the hospital this week, and they did a. Managed to get by on pen and paper, basically.
Right. That is one thing about the NHS, is the digitization efforts over the years have never really come fully to fruition, so everything does still work on antiquated tech.
They have a way. They figure it out. So that was kind of impressive.
I think it would be more efficient if you digitized it effectively, but you would definitely have to have quite a lot of redundancy with this sort of thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a question everyone was asking to me as a techie person, there was just sort of kept coming back to me. It's like, so why do all these things run on Windows? Why didn't they just build it on Linux? And I'm like, because everyone, it's easier on Windows. There's a lower barrier to entry to people actually using stuff on Windows or developing on Windows.
Surely the actual question, especially with the NHS, is why does everything need to be internet enabled and updating constantly? Can you not? I mean, obviously they do want to be able to connect between hospitals or whatever across the country to share information, but make it a single computer that does that and have everything else on an isolated subnet.
It wouldn't have mattered, because that one thing would have updated and then the others.
Yeah, but why do they all need to update?
Because because CrowdStrike's a security thing, right?
But you wouldn't need IT that security if you weren't exposed to the outside, in theory.
I mean, I guess there's always vectors, right?
But, yeah.
But I suppose you're right. I suppose not every internal machine would need to run it if it wasn't.
It does seem like there was a photo of a CT scanner with a blue screen. And I'm like, I don't know if that's real, but if it is, like, that should be air gapped, surely.
Yeah. Right. There's. Yeah, why? Yeah,
definitely
why
shouldn't be a wireless signal.
Why would the CT be running?
Yeah, I don't know if that's real or if that's. I mean, that was part of the montages of, you know, blue screens everywhere, but that seems suspect. That one, frankly,
yeah, because there are definitely. I'm sure I've encountered heart rate monitors that are actually not heart rate monitors. Sorry, what was I thinking? Like ultrasound machines, that are basically running Windows.
Sure. Yeah.
And the fancy software runs on top.
But even if they are running Windows, they would need to be connected to the internet at all times.
Probably not, no. Well, depends how they all do their, like, because I guess you'd have to, there would be more infrastructure work required, but I bet they do, like, use the internet, right, to be like, okay, I got my ultrasounds, we've recorded the images off this thing, we're going to just send them to some cloud repository that the NHS owns, so it's all associated with your account and we can access it. Da, 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 da. It's probably just easier to take that one internet hop in terms of like architecture design than it is to go to a proxy server and then have that send it out. And so in theory, it would be cheaper, but you know, this is the NHS we're talking about. It's not.
It's a shame there isn't like an obvious. It's because it's easier, right? Exactly. That's why. It's like, what I understand is like, this isn't a really a big deal, like security wise or whatever, or maybe it is, but like, you know, compared to a CT scanner. But why, like, does a billboard on Times Square have to run Windows?
It doesn't have to, but again, it's just easier to develop. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all it is. It doesn't have to be much of an app, right? You could knock that up in a few minutes, probably.
Right. Yeah. But in which case, why not stick it on a Raspberry Pi running?
Well, yeah.
Well, there you go.
Could be done. But yeah, it doesn't really matter what they build it on. It could have affected any one of the platforms apart from the whole kernel driver thing, right? But like,
yeah, but a similar thing did happen to like a couple of Linux distros, you know, last year.
Sure.
So, you know, it's not unique to Windows.
Windows
used everywhere.
Microsoft could have cocked up the update and not CrowdStrike, right? And it would have taken a lot more out, you know. It could just happen. Mac could issue a bad update. Not that that's ever happened, but I guess it very well could.
Indeed. It's just ironic because obviously, as everyone knows, like CrowdStrike was bought, you know, and is a product to prevent this kind of thing.
And it broke everything. Yep. I mean, gaming's had its fair few of those stories over the years, right, with DRM software, right? Because that also runs at kernel level in some like cases.
Like
Securom. I know that's ancient now and not really in the... I don't think that's even a thing currently.
I don't think so, but that was bad at the time.
Yeah, it was atrocious. But that could potentially balk your system. And I don't know whether it's true or not, but I think there were complaints about Riot's Vanguard when that turned up.
Yeah, that's definitely rude. Speaking of that, just to make another random segue.
Here we go.
Been seeing adverts for Valorant on YouTube again.
I've been getting a few of those.
Advertising it as a beta, and I'm like, what? A beta of what exactly? Like, if it's a beta of a new.
I think it's the console version. Oh, okay. Yeah, because that is brand new.
Definitely doesn't imply that anywhere in the ad footage. In fact, they show probably people sitting at desks looking at PCs. I mean, maybe it's not a PC. Yeah. It'd just be a monitor attached to a console, I guess.
I wonder if the Xbox version allows you to plug a keyboard and mouse in, like some Xboxes do. Some Xbox games do.
And then to segue off that segue.
Go, go, go.
YouTube advert time.
Yay!
Last week, I had several days where I was just getting adverts for like three or four different edgy anime brawler shooter games consecutively. And I'm like, there are far too many of these.
Yeah.
Stop making these goddamn things.
Are they were they the mobile free-to-play type stuff? Because there are like hundreds of those.
Well, I don't think they're mobile any longer, but they are free-to-play.
Yeah.
It's just like this. I saw
a lot. I'm always surprised actually when you see some of those games, and it's like, oh wait, that is mobile for some reason.
Well,
like,
I mean, they can get away with making a lot of that mobile as well.
Yeah,
but yeah. When you see like three consecutive adverts for three consecutive games that are all just that edgy anime shooter brawler style, yeah. I'm just like, how is this market not saturated already?
I keep seeing what made me laugh the other day. You know, I think we've talked about it before, the sort of fake games that turn up on it. I've been seeing like an influx of ads that are on Twitter mainly that are like, we made the fake game.
Like, but they did that on Steam already. That joke's been done.
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite funny. It's like, no, we actually made it look and play like those videos.
Well,
do.
I've been seeing sort of the opposite of that, of one of the shitty bullshit mobile games that I've been stuck with adverts forever. They've started tacking on, like, on the end of the advert, actual gameplay of the real game rather than the fake bullshit they show on the first half of the advert.
Yeah, maybe they have to, yeah. I did watch a video about this whole thing, right, and those are, like, basically just... like A/B tested CG videos to draw people in, and they're like, but they get away with it as not false advertising. But the game, because the game does end up including as a tiny mini game, some incredibly badly made, not nearly the same looking kind of derivative of that sort of like game. So like the one that I always see is the one where you just move left and right, and go through the gates and gain more soldiers or a bigger weapon to shoot zombies on a road, and it's like, well, that's quite an easy mini game to just quickly crap into a game.
It's quite an easy game to just make that fucking game if you want to,
and make it well. I'm sure there must be like, there's probably something to making that game well, like, right? But was that what the CG AB testing has led me to believe? Like,
well, yeah, possibly. You've just seen it so much, you're like, this must be a thing.
Yeah. Match 3 effect. Like, even Gnome was going on about, like, she was getting ads for something, and it's like, what? This actually looks quite well. Oh, Kit Harington's in this ad. Oh, what is it? There's a Game of Thrones game. And then it's like, oh, it's a Match 3. It's a Bejeweled game. It's like, even she was, like, a little bit suckered in for a moment because of this, like, high-profile ad.
I've actually seen any of the bullshit Game of Thrones mobile game adverts for a while, actually. Those have fallen off my rotation, apparently.
Do you remember that one that had, like, oh, what was that one where they had that? I mean, this is testing. This is going to test my language skills here. But there was a lot of ads for what was, I think, a Clash of Clans like game, but not Clash of Clans. But it had like a swimsuit model or something in every single one of the ads.
Well, naturally, like, I do.
She was super famous at that moment in time. I can't remember what her name, but anyway. She was in some terrible film with Cameron Diaz that I ended up going to see. Ugh. Anyway, whatever. Yeah. She was in like almost every ad. And then that game was terrible. just like out-marketed. Wasn't Arnie doing some ads for something at some point? Like one of these mobile games?
Yeah, maybe.
Hi, I'm Arnold. I'm associated with military stuff. Come play my military game. Yeah. Holding it down on the battleship front.
Oh my god.
I can't remember. I made the mistake. Sorry, story of the week, right? Mm-hmm. And I think I've told this.
Story of the week.
Told something similar to this before on the podcast, but I made the mistake of sort of showing some vague interest to a window salesman.
Jesus.
Yeah, I know. Partly because, I mean, it's actually true, right? At some point in the future, we are going to have to redo the windows on this house.
That's a very, like, unspecified number of years kind of future, though.
There's basically problems with every single window in this house. They're not great. They're not well done. They're not like, live or die bad. They're not going to suddenly, like, collapse and leave a giant hole in the wall. But they're not great. There are places where there's poor ceiling and blown windows. Some of them don't properly close. Are very hard to open, stuff like that. At some point, we're going to need to get them done. So I showed a little bit of interest and then fell into the, like, And I was very upfront because I'd made this mistake once before and had a guy come round and we went through it all to get a no obligation quote. And he was here for friggin' hours. And, yeah. And then all of the old sales tricks came out, you know, like, I need to ring my boss and da 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 da.
All the classics.
And get a discount. If you were to say yes today, how low could we go? And like, Gnome was being super cheeky to be like, yeah, and be like, would you do it for a grand? And they're like, no. Don't get me wrong. And I made that same mistake again. And we went through that whole palaver again. Admittedly, didn't take nearly as long this time. And Gnome was, even though I was super upfront about, please don't play any of those tricks with me. We've been through this before. They still did it.
Of course.
And it was still very annoying. And we made it clear to them it was very annoying. Like, just don't do this, please. Ugh, boy. Story of the week. I'm a bit of an idiot. I should just get quotes from people.
Only if you fell for it, would you be an idiot?
Yeah,
it's fine if they're just going to do what they're going to do, even if you tell them not to.
Yeah, just very frustrating. Just don't do it, guys. Because as soon as you start doing it, like my red flag, like
yeah,
brain,
they do it because it works on most people, right?
Yeah,
they don't care that it doesn't actually work on you.
I guess, but it's just. Does it work? I don't even know.
Yeah, they wouldn't do it. If
yeah,
it didn't work. I'm sure. Okay.
Surely do you think the savviness of the average consumer is increasing? No.
maybe that would be hopeful. I'd say probably no.
Probably no. Yes. So the key takeaway is don't be nice to people.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Oh, I fucking hate that. I hate it.
You don't have to be nice to salespeople who've got the gender, right?
Yeah.
You should be nice to people who don't have an obvious
try
gender.
To sell me stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Stresses me out as well, just thinking about
Yeah, I know.
But like, oh God.
But that's how they do, right? Like, yeah. They want to, like, it helps them get a sale to put you in an awkward spot, right? And it's like, sod off.
Don't stress me, fella.
Yeah.
I got a small minion to do that for me. Anyway, that's my not story. Oh, it's not a funny story. It's just a story. It's just me being a moron.
All right, have we got any non-gaming news? Have we got any? I just saw stupid Marvel news, Marvel Desperation news.
I mean, have you seen this? No, I haven't.
So, you know, everything's falling apart Marvel-wise. Well, not, I mean, I haven't seen the new one or whatever, the Deadpool one. Maybe that'll be okay.
Sure that will be funny.
Yeah, probably. But yeah, so obviously they're getting the Russo brothers back, right, to do their next Avengers film.
Cool.
And then the latest news is they're getting freaking Robert Downey Jr. back to play Doctor Doom.
Well, they can get away with that because his face is covered the entire time.
Right.
Hopefully.
So there you go.
If they don't fuck up Doctor Doom, then his face will be covered the whole time.
I mean, they're dangerous territory for fucking up Doctor Doom. The one, you know, super important villain that they've held back this whole time.
I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of other super important villains that they...
Yeah, but not on a level of Doctor Doom. He's like the guy, and they haven't used him till now, so...
That Galactus.
Yeah, I suppose they've got Galactus.
I don't reckon they'll ever be able to pull that one off, though. Like, what are you going to do about something that eats planets?
Just look at what they did in the comics and find out. Because they've already dealt with that probably several times at this point.
Probably. I did watch something, I suppose, that I was pleasantly surprised at. I sat down and watched Raya and the Last Dragon, which is a Disney animation thing. Similar vibes to, like, you know, similar vibes and setting, I suppose, to Mulan in many ways. But,
slightly different setting, but it's definitely the same vibes.
Not too dissimilar, but a little bit more fantasy going on, I suppose. Like,
I more meant like
they're still talking dragons. So what do you want? Like,
I more meant like, yeah, okay, completely different time period, though, right?
Well, I mean, it's nondescript yeah. Asia in Raya, I think, and whereas like Mulan is clearly Japanese or Chinese, yeah. You know what I mean? Do you know what I mean? Real.
Yes. Like a real yeah. historical event, but not.
Yeah. Real feeling. This very much isn't, but yeah, definitely those vibes still. It's good. Oh, that's what I say. It's good. And of course it's good because it's got Awkwafina in it. So, you know, there you go. If you want some of that energy, you get it here.
I mean, she's always good value. I'll give her that.
Good value. Do you reckon she doesn't charge enough? Is that what you're saying?
You know what I mean. It's good value. She's the best thing. I saw, I can't remember why, but I watched, what's that, Crazy Rich Asians, right?
Oh, and, she's in that,
yeah.
Is she?
Yeah, she's good value. Yeah.
Good value. Good value. Yeah, watch that. That was decent. That was decent. Do you want to talk about the Olympics? Because that's all that's going on right now.
Ceremony.
God damn, that thing is too long. It was too long.
It's always long,
and
though.
Too, yeah, but like really long this time. I don't know. Well, I actually don't know what the numbers are. Like, was it actually longer than the regular ones? But
the regular ones.
Well, I'm calling. I mean that in the sense that because Paris did a weird one, right? They didn't do the stadium show that every other like opening ceremony does, and they went like, let's cover all of Paris pretty much, and it was crap. I mean, it's an impressive, in some respects, like logistical challenge. I get that. Like, it must have been really hard to organize and try and keep it in sync. But that was sort of the problem. It didn't really stay in sync. The mistakes were made. Some bits were really terrible.
What were you thinking in particular?
Well, I don't know. Like, there was a bit where they like did the can-can, right? Like with people from Moulin Rouge, but they were clearly struggling, I think, to hear the synchronization or hear what was in their earpieces or something. Because you think of a can-can, you think of everyone's legs going up and down at the same time, right?
Sure.
It was pretty off. It was pretty rubbish. And just didn't look very organized at all. Just like there were sections later on where there were like dance acts doing things and they clearly didn't have a problem or something, and that was all quite well timed and looked great, but there were definite sections where it didn't really work, like in certain transitions that didn't work, like the robotic or mechanical horse, I should say, going down the Seine. Cool visually, right? Not a yeah, bad idea. Pretty cool. Neat, except for the thing, that thing took like 20 minutes or whatever to go by. Like do its thing down the Seine, and it's like, how do you make this interesting? Oh, I know. Let's just have this one shot continue for 20 minutes or however long it was. It was insane. And then when they finally reached the destination,
it was insane. It's true.
And then when they finally
it was on top of the Seine, but okay.
Yeah. But then when they finally reached the destination, like it was supposed to like I think be like, oh, we'll cut to some other bit of video, and then suddenly you'll see the horses coming riding in underneath the Eiffel Tower, right? Except they like mistakenly showed a bit more footage of it on the river, and it's like, cut, no, it's under the Eiffel Tower now. And it's like, oh, you didn't do that very well. Some of the graphics didn't work in some of the sections, and they struggled with that. There was a segment where I think like 10 golden statues were supposed to come out of pillars, and I think one of them failed. It just sort of like there was this awkward pause, and it's like, nothing's happening.
I'd read that like obviously because it was stretched over that whole length, they obviously had planned for months, and you know the cameraman had set up all their shots ahead of time, and it was all good. But because it was so stretched out, there were no alternate shots ready to go, so they couldn't cut away and like wipe rain off the lens,
there was plenty of that.
They only had one shot available, so like every single shot was like covered in rain.
Yeah, plenty of rainy lenses. I think during that horse sequence at the end, the cameraman ran into something for a moment. Which is, you know, that's always funny. I'm not gonna say that was anyone's fault, but it's always funny. And it just must have been a terrible show to be at. It's like if you were one of the saps sat there, like it would like just must have been absolutely appalling to actually just try and watch, because you would only see small parts of it, especially doing that ridiculously extended catwalk section. Well, they had like a small bridge where everything was happening.
Did not look safe, that like red catwalk thing.
No, it really didn't. It was so wet and slippery. It's like, oh, no.
But nobody fell or anything.
No. Cool. And it was very French.
As is required.
And then at times, not French enough.
That's the main thing.
And then at times, not French enough. So how do we elongate this even more? No, we're going to put the Olympic torch back on a boat and give it to Rafa Nadal and Serena Williams, who are at least sporting figures. I'll give them that. Like, let's bring it a little bit back to sport. But we couldn't think of any French people. Apart from Zinedine Zidane.
They had the French stars. From Lady Gaga to Celine Dion.
And Snoop Dogg,
yeah.
At least Celine Dion's French-Canadian, I guess.
Fair enough.
It was
good at the end. Like, it was a good, strong ending. Like, I like the cauldron on the balloon. And sure. I like Celine Dion. I know she's very ill, but she did a great job.
No, she sang it very well indeed. Complaints there. There was what was, in theory, quite a stylish moment where they had that like classic Eurovision piano on fire moment, right? But on a barge in the middle of the Seine, whilst another camera boat is circling it. But they never had, like as you said, they never had an alternate camera ready, right? So it was the only shot you ever saw was from this circling camera. So you had no idea who was on this barge. They never, I think they only showed one close up of those two, of what was going on there. So if you didn't know who they were from the song, it's like, No way of recognizing it. Just lost all impact by only being able to see this from Time Crisis 2 like perspective. It was really weird. I don't know. Like, it just seemed like poor decisions were made. And then every now
I had to switch off when it was fucking Imagine. I understand that they play Imagine at every fucking ceremony, which I don't understand why.
Yeah.
But like, oh, I've heard that song enough times. I don't want to hear that again.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe that's what it was. Maybe it was the barge. No, the barge wasn't Imagine, was it?
The flaming piano, I think, was Imagine.
Was that? Yeah, okay, that was that bit. Okay.
Anyway.
Too long. I mean, parkour guy kind of made sense. Until
Assassin's Creed guy.
Yeah, Assassin's Creed Unity guy. Yeah.
Like running across the parkour across sense. The city.
Although we did kind of leave those children for dead. Like, so Zinedine Zidane gives the Olympic torch to some children who then get on a boat with mystery parkourist. They then get off and, like, walk around a bit, and then you never see those kids again. They sort of disappear into, like, a crowd at some point. Presumed dead. Or kidnapped.
My favourite bit by far was the metal band, like, playing at the...
Of course. That
building, like on the Ile de la Cité, like that was notoriously used as a prison during the terror or whatever of the French Revolution.
It was a cool idea, but I'm not sure it really what's the word? Like, I'm not sure the optics or the visual of it was particularly great at a distance. It only worked if the camera zoomed in and you could see the headless Marie Antoinette.
You could see them on the outside of the building, and they had enough flames going on, I thought, to make it like somewhat effective.
There was a lot of fire.
It was cool.
Not just a little bit of fire. There was a lot of fire. It was very weird. Like, I'd rather go back to. I remember saying at the time of the 2012 Olympics and the Danny Boyle show that I didn't think too much of it then, but actually. Looking back at it, it's like, I didn't know what we were missing. I think the problem was is we'd had Beijing, right, which was an incredible show.
Yeah, Beijing is ridiculous.
And then...
What's LA going to do? They've already used Snoop Dogg this time.
That's true.
he'll be back.
That was his training for next time.
They'll make the Olympic torch even more blunt-shaped than it is this time. And, He was at the gymnastics this morning having a dance. He wasn't one of the competitors. I just need to make that clear. He should be in the breaking contest.
He is not capable of doing any move of that substantial amount.
I have
at this point, I don't think.
I have to see what that is, though, the Olympic break dancing, just to see how on earth they market. Like, what is the? Do they do it like gymnastics?
The same as skateboarding or whatever, where you won't even understand how the points work because yeah. it's based on skateboarding.
Or is it like, yeah, like a gymnastic?
You understand the concept of the thing.
Oh, well, yeah, but you can still like I don't understand gymnastics and what they're looking for, but like they still have like, oh, this is like you give them the routine you're going to do, and then they'll rate it on the difficulty, and that's a multiplier on top of the execution.
I mean, that is how skateboarding works as well,
right? Yeah, that's what I thought. Like, you give them the move list you're going to do,
but it's not like we're well past the point of there being any real like breakdown of the points. It's like you get a 9.
Yeah,
we're not going to say that like what percentage of that was execution or what percentage of that was or just show you the formula that results in a 9 from multiplying by difficulty or whatever.
But they actually do
sometimes.
Yeah, in the diving and the gymnastics, they actually show you that, and it's kind of neat. I even noticed, like, if you were there at the diving, they've got some, or was it the diving or the gymnastics? Anyway, they had some, like, CG graphics going on telling you the move they were going to do, like, in the stadium. They didn't have any graphics on the actual show. Like, someone I work with was saying, like, the BBC actually doesn't have great rights to the Olympics this yeah. time round, that there is a plenty of sport that they just can't show. Probably explains the BBC being the BBC, having far too much studio time already. God damn it.
Need all that time to talk about the quality of the athletes.
The word quality has come up a lot. Although Noam did pull me up when I said quality to something, and he's like, no, he said the qualities. And I'm like, okay, that's acceptable.
Okay, no, that's legitimate use.
you've used that correctly. Okay. And now you've said, was it on the podcast or last time we talked about it and you, Dan, raised your complaint about it is what it is?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my, I'm hearing it everywhere. What have you done to me?
It's so annoying.
I wish you hadn't said that.
What can I say, man? It is what it is.
Anywho, it's like my YouTube let's get into it problem. Like now.
Yeah.
So, I watched another YouTube and someone said, let's get to it. And I'm like, oh, I don't know how I feel about that.
It's a variation.
I don't know how I feel about that. It's so close.
Well, shall we get into it?
There's not a lot to get into.
No.
There's nothing to get into. Okay.
What have we got? In the news.
News! Well, the potentially big news is that SAG-AFTRA are going on strike, or the video game actors part of it. I get lost on what bits of SAG are what, but it's definitely AFTRA this time, and the actors, the voice actors for video games, part of it at least, they're going on strike again. This time on basically similar grounds to what happened with the big strike in TV and film. It's over AI and the use of their likenesses and building voice models, any of that jazz, using AI models. Because there's basically nothing written about this, is my understanding of it, and so they want protections put into contracts and stuff like that, that the publishers and developers just don't implicitly get the rights to do stuff in AI, that they, you know, just by the fact that they hired the actor, that's not enough, so they have to agree to that or disagree to that as part of their contract agreements, which is fair enough, but there was some confusion about why they're even striking about it, because in I was reading the Kotaku breakdown, and there is a spokesperson basically saying we're a bit disappointed that they decided to strike. We were making good progress. Like 24 of 25 points had been agreed upon and sorted out. So we're not quite sure why they resorted to this. So it's all a little confusing, but it potentially points towards it being a very short strike if it is mostly resolved already.
Yeah.
yes, it's definitely something they should do. But it's as I think Zach, you said, it's a little bit surprising that they didn't just incorporate it from the other strike, right? Like from the rest of it. It's like, well, this is clearly the way it's going. Let's just, can't we do this right now? Like, why didn't it just automatically become a thing?
Yeah.
I don't claim to understand how SAG functions or how its various... I was about to call them sects. That's not really... That doesn't seem right. But how their various subdivisions hang together. But you'd think there'd be some... a little more collaboration, potentially. Or a little more thought in the groups operating similarly. Anyway, that all sounds like I'm knocking SAG a little bit. I'm not. It's just it's just how it shakes out. This is a good thing.
Okay,
but it may impact development of video games as well.
Well, maybe.
If there's stuff in progress, it's not in progress currently, or at least the voice and acting side of it isn't in progress. If your voice actors are members of SAG, like I believe Troy Baker is, and that, you know, the high flyers. So there's that. By the time you're listening to this podcast, the Xbox 360 store will be no more.
Oh, no.
It is disappearing. And a whole bunch of games did get, some heavy discounts, especially ones that weren't... that aren't on any backwards compatibility list or anything like that. There were a bunch of really big discounts going on. Unfortunately, from my perspective, none of them were interesting enough for me to look at them and go, "I'm going to get my Xbox out of my loft so I can go purchase these," because it seems
you could buy them in the last days of the store and still have access to them.
Yes, so they're not killing off the download capability. Okay. They're just killing off the purchase. They're basically, you have to think of it like they're delisting everything.
Right. So can you still play Carcassonne or whatever?
I could still play Carcassonne is on the backwards compatibility list. Right, so I have that on my Series X installed right now.
There's going to be a ton of new DLC for Castle Crashers. That's why.
Yeah, that's also true. But I think they would probably not do that for the 360 version. And no. I think they made Castle Crashers HD anyway at one point. Would they call it Castle Crashers HD? I guess Castle Crashers was technically HD anyway, but 720p HD. So I don't know. They did do a re-release of Castle Crashers at some point. Anyway, I assume it's all going into that. A little bit of an end of an era. It does mean there's a whole bunch of DLC that's disappearing forever. But what that did... encourage me to do, so not news, but state of emulation. Xenia's pretty good these days, yo. If you want your 360 emulation going on, that thing is making strides. It's coming a lot. It's like the weird position, like both Xbox 360 and PS3. That era of emulation is coming on very quickly at the moment and is doing pretty well. You can run the original Red Dead Redemption on a Steam Deck. Pretty well. Before they even get around to releasing, isn't there still rumors that the original Red Dead is coming to PC sometime soon?
No, I thought that did happen.
Did that happen? The original Red Dead?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought that hadn't happened yet.
Or to PC. Or maybe it happened to consoles only. I can't remember.
Nope, I can't think off the top of my head. I thought that hadn't happened yet. Classically, right? Because of the whole... that was the whole argument, right? That its code base is a mess.
It got re-released relatively recently on PS4, Switch.
Oh, okay.
Etc. I don't know if it actually came to PC, though.
Oh, yes, yes. No, you're right. I do remember that. I think I watched that Digital Foundry.
Yeah,
so there's still no official PC version. So this is your... this is the way to do it currently, but yeah, that stuff's coming on pretty good. So I had a little look. I haven't tried much or really anything yet because it's a little bit of a faff. Obviously, those the games are a bit bigger for those platforms, right? If you're trying to get hold of them, suppose technically, officially, you know, dump your own games and all that stuff, but what is the difference of dumping a game you own on and just downloading a game you own, you know?
Well, especially at the point where it's a CD.
Yeah.
Like if it's a cartridge, that's a slightly different situation.
The ISO would be identical, right? That this does not... don't call this advice for legal reasons.
Sure.
There you go. But that's happened. The F360 store is shutting down. That's kind of all I got, really. Is there anything else major going on or anything you can think of that you've come across? I mean, there was the mind big deal of like bag face guy, right? From that Nintendo posted some creepy image of a guy wearing a bag on his head and it had a happy face on it. And that turned out to be a teaser for a new Detective Club game.
Right.
Off the back of their, you know, they re-released two of the Famicom Detective Club games relatively recently. And presumably they did well because they've made another one. They're making another one. That's all I got.
Right.
News is quiet right now. I guess everything's a little bit lulled because when's Gamescom? That's like the next thing.
Isn't that the next thing?
I think on the calendar. I think that tends to happen end of summer.
21st of August. Okay. Another month.
Oh, okay. Not that far then. Not that far. So yeah, expect more news in a month.
Yeah, we're in the lull. Well, I guess we better talk about what we've been playing then. Moving on to you, Rob.
Ooh. Shall I keep it down on the close to emulation but not quite front? And Zach wandered in earlier today to me trying out the new mods for Outrun 2 Coast to Coast.
What?
Outrun 2, yeah, because...
I thought that game was hard to get hold of just in the base.
It is, but the PC version less so.
Oh, cool.
The Xbox version is like considered the definitive. The original Xbox version is considered the definitive version of that game. But
is it like Ferrari licensing issues or whatever?
That's why you can't buy it legitimately. Right. You have to find an old disc copy, right? That's how you're supposed to do it now. You actually do need to find the physical media.
Did you have that at some point? I can't remember. The physical media.
No. Okay. So just being totally honest, no, I do not own a copy of our Outrun 2006 Coast to Coast.
Okay.
However, it is Sega aren't going to sell it to you. And they seem to have absolutely no desire to go back to it. And so a myabandonware.net.
Yeah.
I shouldn't really advertise this, I suppose. But they basically host a copy of the game that is pretty much good to go on modern systems. You then go and find this mod package called Outrun 2006 C2C Tweaks. You install that and you don't really install it. You just copy a few files to your game directory. Boom! You have an updated, fully running version of Outrun 2 Coast to Coast that will support widescreen and texture packs and run any resolution you want, fixes a bunch of stuff that was wrong with the PC port of the game. It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Sweet.
It's a good time. So I've spent an awful lot of time on the Xbox original Outrun 2, but as I say, because of the scarcity of Coast to Coast, it's become a little bit of an impossibility to get hold of. The PS2 version or PSP versions are less of a problem to get hold of, but they have their own little issues in that some content is locked behind some interoperability stuff. Like you need to hook your PSP to, I can't even remember. Like, or is it a PS3 version of the game? It can't be a PS3 version again. There's some weird stuff where like there's some account connectivity is required to unlock all of the content in the game. Mm. So they're kind of considered the bum deal, and in the Outrun out of the series. But they are a lot easier to get hold of. That Xbox version is expensive. Now you're looking well over £100 to get hold of a copy of one of those. which is a shame because it's a fabulous game and Sega really should revisit it. Man, how hype would I be for an Outrun 3? Oh, man. Oh, I'd probably be more hype than I am for New Jet Set Radio because, I don't know, like New Jet Set Radio doesn't look that good.
Well, it's just going to be part of the open world of Crazy Taxi.
Yes. That yeah, and I'll throw that in as like a seasonal event. Outrun Taxi mode.
Where you just have like
100 Ferraris enter a city.
Where you have like the city area of Crazy Taxi, but then you have like the like single routes that just go outwards where you only ever get like one super rare fare that's just like take me all the way to the coast.
Right. That would be pretty good. Yeah, so I have dabbled with that. I can't remember if I mentioned it last time on the podcast, but I finished Humanity, or at least I finished all of...
It's over.
Yeah, it's over. We're done. I can safely conclude the species is doomed.
Well, give it 6 months.
Yeah. So I... as I said before, that game's pretty good. I'm not 100% sure I was on board with all of its mechanics as it started expanding. It's like it presents you a pretty flexible framework by the end of it in which you could probably devise quite a lot of different puzzles. I did spend a brief amount of time digging into some of the user content because obviously it's got its own level creator and you can mess with all of its systems and try and make stuff out of it. Some more successful than others. I found myself enjoying the more traditional puzzles, like how the game starts, where you're just doing the sort of lemmingsy sort of manipulate the streams of people style mechanics. That for me, that's kind of where that game really sung, was just like when it was at its simplest. But then I came across one that was like, oh, you used the dog to push switches, and those switches were supposed to be like flippers on a pinball table, or were supposed to release balls down specific holes at specific times. So you, in theory, like marble run some stuff to success. So it didn't really work because you couldn't pan the camera up high enough from your dog character in order to see what was going on above you. You had to keep pausing the game and then moving it. Mm. There's people trying creative stuff that is then like let down by some of the game's like camera systems and things like that. So it's I ran into a few of those and it's like, okay, maybe digging too deep into this isn't going to be all that fun.
How many exploding sharks did you see?
I saw a zero exploding sharks.
Got that.
It's not like Little Big Planet. Yeah, man, those are great. So I enjoyed my time of it. I did encounter a couple of glitches towards the end as well, where certain things didn't quite mechanically work right, and one actual glitch in the final boss. Yes, it has two boss fights somehow, which might like take you out of the experience a little bit. But they one of them basically made it so I couldn't finish it because it glitched out and thought there weren't enough humans about for it to be possible for me to finish the level, even though there were. So it put a little warning on the bottom of the screen at the very start of the encounter, and I thought nothing of it, thinking that was the glitch because it disappeared. But then I just could, it just never ended. The fight never ended. And it's like, okay, this is clearly wrong. So I bailed out, did it again, didn't get that little message at the start of the fight, and then, was able to actually finish the game. So apart from that, been a pretty nice experience. It's pretty cool. It's pretty. If you want a puzzle fix, go do it. It's good. You get to turn all the people into doggos as one of the late game unlocks.
Got to change the name of the game at that point.
Doganity. Cananity.
Dog kind.
Yes. And that'd be a different game. Humankind is that civ-like,
yeah,
right?
That's true. Okay.
Dog kind. yeah, so there's that. But the vast majority of my time has still been spent in Immortals of Avium. That game is, like I said before, that game is way longer than I was anticipating. My Xbox stat says like over 24 hours in now. Like, it's not a tight 8. After all that, it's nice. Very much not a tight 8. I really quite like this game. It is, as I said before, like I think it is technically flawed. But I'm having a really good time. It's got the draw for me. Like, I want to see it through. I want to come back in. I want to find more stuff. I want to explore its world a little bit and get more gear. And I'm on the hunt for the legendary gear at the moment. Like, I need to improve my character, and I need to improve my character or improve my standing and do more damage, because it has a God of War like. What were they? Were they the Valkyries in the first new God of War game?
Yeah.
It has six. They call them the six, but six tough fights that are, really very difficult. But not difficult in the annoying kind of way. They're difficult in that they're a bit bullet spongy. Like, you know, they take a lot of damage and they do you a lot of damage. So it requires a bit of concentration and a bit of it's more of an endurance test, I suppose. But obviously having a stronger character will make that a little bit more doable, a bit more possible. And those are kind of fun, because I figured out a strategy for one of them that was working really well for me until he threw in like a late surprise, and the boss wasn't actually the problem. It was the minions he threw in that then became the problem, and I couldn't deal with them because they were too high level and they were harder than the goddamn boss. But I don't know. Maybe this is the sort of difficulty that people talk about when they talk about Soulsborne games or something like that. Like, it doesn't feel unfairly difficult. Like, you just know it's like the slider has been pushed up, and that's okay. If they're like, I don't mind that. There's definitely been some fights in the game where it feels a little bit weighted the wrong way. Like, there are certain combinations, I think, of enemies. If they throw them at you at the same time, it's really, really tricky to deal with. Some of the boss fights turn up again as like special challenges, but they will be challenges that are not just the boss anymore. The boss will be there, but there'll be some extra stuff going on, and juggling the two starts to feel a little bit unfair at times. This is really quite difficult. I'm not quite sure how, from the first person perspective, I can really keep a handle on all that's going on. You know, that kind of stuff. So it's, I wouldn't say it's perfect in its difficulty, but, most of the time, it's a good blend. It's good. It's a good mix, and works. I said I'm doing all the exploring and stuff like that, but I don't mean to say like the Metroidvania-iness that I sort of talked a little bit about last time is perfectly done. It kind of suffers from the problem of the world has a lot of secret areas strewn about it, most of which you can only access once you've got certain abilities. But the story doesn't really, or the world doesn't really force you to go back to those areas. So you kind of have to make yourself go back to them, if you see what I mean. Like, oh, I know I missed some stuff here, or oh, I know I couldn't do some stuff there. It's not like Metroid, or like most Metroid games will take you back through that area, right? And you'll have a reason to be back there. But you'll now take a new and interesting route through there. This doesn't really do that well. You'll return you'll return to some areas, but you have to do the legwork to be like, I need to go back here and see what's in that chest I couldn't get to. And that's, I don't know if that's a combination of a failing of the world design and I suppose the storytelling. They probably could do a bit more of that with the storytelling, but there's plenty of fast travel points about. So there come bits of the stories where you do have to return to areas, but it's just like you just fast travel where you need to be rather than having to traverse the level again. Or, do you know what I mean? It's a little clunky in that regard. doesn't mean I'm not still doing it. I'm a bit confused about what there's these other there's these like challenge areas that you go to that have like some of these harder fights in, and they're called Shroud Fanes. But I've stumbled upon a
Fane.
Fane, yeah, F A N E. I don't know if Fane must have a fantasy meaning or something like that. I don't know.
Fane.
Okay. But there's these other ones that I've stumbled upon called Shatter Fanes. That are just locked from me. I find them and I just can't access them. And I'm like, they've at no point been explained or discussed or anything like that. So I don't really know what they were. Like maybe they were dropped as an update for like a new game plus or something. It's like, here's something else to go do or to power you up or something. I don't understand. So they're a bit confusing when you stumble upon them.
Mm.
And I actually quite like the story. Like, it's, I wouldn't say it's unpredictable. It's fairly predictable in that you relatively quickly realize that it's one of those stories where you just have to understand that you're playing the idiot. Like, your character just makes stupid ass decisions on a regular basis, and you're like, why are we doing this again? Like, why would you do such a thing? And of course the reason is plot. We needed the reason for this to be more complicated or more dumb than it should be. And it, like, if you can get over that, like, the actual sort of minute to minute storytelling isn't that bad. It's like it's pretty good. It's pretty gripping. It's like, I'm not quite sure how they're going to resolve what's going on. There's enough lore going on in the world and enough. If I'm being frank, it's not really lore. It's fantasy bullshit. They're just making stuff up all the time. And it's like, just like, but somehow it is like kind of tying together towards the end of it. There's a whole lot of nonsense going on and a whole lot of stupid stuff. And you're just, there's like, why is this? Oh, it just is. Oh, like, what, can we do this? Mm. Yes, we can. And if you just kind of roll with it, it's fine. And it kind of makes sense. But they do tie some elements back together at certain points in the story. And there's
things that you only... They only feel like they tie in later, but when they're introduced, you're like, what?
Yeah. Why is that a thing? My biggest criticism with the story and the worlding is like when there is a big moment, like most of the time, I think it's mostly when they do a big moment of destruction in particular, when there's like a literal earth changing event, or when a whole bunch of people are supposed to have died. They have a tendency to not really show that. You kind of get a little bit of like, oh, a thing is happening, and then they cut, and then your character gets knocked out or something, and then a little bit later you come back somewhere. It's like, what happened? Oh, a whole bunch of people died. Like some really cataclysmic thing happened, and you're like, why didn't I see? Why couldn't you have shown me that? Like, can I not have had a cutscene showing this really disastrous thing occurring? Like. And that seems to have happened like multiple times. Like, I guess they didn't have the budget to put an explosion graphic somewhere. Like, I don't know. Weird. It's a bit weird. Yes, and as I said before, like it's sometimes hard to overlook the technical limitations of the game. It does run like crap at times, and it's there are some. Most of the visuals look pretty good, I would say. They're good to great. You know, you can see how it's taking shortcuts at times. Like, it's pretty good with the LOD loading and doing the Unreal 5 stuff of, you don't really notice pop-in particularly ever. That you can spot, the only thing you can really see pop-in are, like, lighting effects. Like, it's not rendering lights past a certain distance, and as you get closer to things, you might frequently notice that they suddenly start glowing, or, like, yeah, a light source will turn on as you approach it, and it's not like a sudden change. It's like it smoothly transitions to that light being on, but it still looks a bit weird as you're wandering around and being like, or you see something from afar, and as you get close to it, it like gets covered in shadow, classically, and you're like, oh, okay, that wasn't a thing. That was just because a shadow wasn't rendering there. So you get that, but it's generally a pretty good looking game. The one that my biggest complaint visually there's an element of the world called the ley lines, which are like these, I don't know, I guess magical rivers that kind of just hang in the air, pretty much everywhere. And the graphic effect they use for those is really jank compared to the rest of the game. Like, it is like, and these are a pretty big deal in terms of the story and your traversal in places. Like, they're a big part of the game, but they just look garbage. They don't animate at the full frame rate of the game either. They animate at like 30 and the game is targeting 60, so they look out of place originally. And they look quite polygonal, and like, because they're warping around all over the place, but like the way they warp doesn't look very high fidelity. Like, it's weird. It's like, it seems like such a massive oversight that they just look so crap. Like, I don't know.
Because this is like an important one to get right, these ley lines, right?
Yeah.
Evidently an important part of the world, and
they're everywhere.
And that sounds like a cool concept to use a good effect on.
Yeah. And they just didn't. I don't get it. They look rubbish. But anyway, yeah, a bit of a Rob review, classically. But I am enjoying it, and like, I think it's a good game. Maybe swimming in sevens is a little bit harsh. Maybe it deserved an eight. I don't know. Maybe the technical hurdles were enough to bring it down to the seven. Not sure, but. It's a fun time. Not every game has to be Red Dead Redemption.
No.
That's pretty much all I got, I think.
Really? Yeah. Oh, yeah, because you've done your retro racing game bit without run.
Yep, yep.
And then the main course.
Oh, Dreamcast update.
Yes.
Dreamcast update.
Is it still yellow?
It's still very yellow. Still looks like a milky tea. I haven't tried to bicarb it or anything, or is it baking soda? But yeah, bicarbonate soda supposedly cleans it up. So this thing wasn't nearly as dead as I thought it was. So, or it was, but not in the way I expected. I plugged it in and I tested it, and it got stuck in a reboot loop. And I thought, oh, that seems bad. What on earth could be causing that? Like, so it just wouldn't stay on for very long. I was expecting the disk drive to be the bit that was effed.
Right.
Because that's how I remember both of my previous Dreamcasts that failing. So the power supply, or this reboot loop, was a surprise. And I thought, oh, that's bad. So I did a bit of research. Turns out there's a really easy fix. You take it apart and you clean it. Like, to the point where you literally just take the thing apart. You take the power board out of it. You clean the pins with a bit of isopropyl alcohol that connect the board to the power board to the rest of the system. You put it back together. Mwah! Chef's kiss. It works.
It works.
Perfectly.
Chef's kiss.
The latest terminology.
Yep. Latest entry in the Cambridge Dictionary. Yeah, it works absolutely perfectly. But weirder than that, the disk drive works perfectly. So the bit I thought was broken... is not That's broken fine. At all.
Are you sure this is actually your Dreamcast?
Currently, no. I have absolutely no idea. Like, it's just not what I thought it was. Yeah, I don't. Well, I might still mod it. I've got no reason not to at this point, but now I've got a spare disk drive, I guess. This has turned out better than expected.
Okay, well, the continuing saga. I'm just cleaning the whole thing.
Just
we'll get it running.
Just give it a clean. It's considerably less dusty than the other consoles I've opened up.
Maybe it draws less air through it than other consoles in general. Yeah.
I mean, it has only got it has only got one really tiny fan, like on the front edge near the open button, and there's only a little bit of ventilation on the back, so there isn't there aren't a lot of holes. There's a little bit of venting on the bottom, I guess, but yeah, not it's not a very holy console, so I guess there's not much room for the dust to get in there. It's very clean. My original Xbox was way dustier when I opened that up. Anyway,
alrighty,
Dreamcast update.
What have you been playing, Zach?
Not anything. Well, only one thing that's kind of got to be talked about, I suppose. First of all, though, I finally got around to playing that Tears of the Kingdom save far enough to get to one of the sequence breaks I wanted to try.
Oh, yeah.
Even though I still can't actually talk about it on this podcast with you guys because yeah. you still be spoilers.
Wait, like, is it a thing? Oh god, is it the cloud thing? I still never figured out.
It's related to that, yes.
Oh boy, okay. Because I technically sequence broke that anyway, right?
Yes, but it did. But so, like, the way I'll describe it is to say that there's a thing.
Oh, don't worry. Well, unless Dan, are you worried about spoilers about the
Well, I'm playing again. Yeah, so exactly. I don't get spoiled. Yeah.
Okay.
There's a thing you have to activate with one of the sage's powers. I mean, that's not really a spoiler to say.
No.
But there's things you activate with sage powers. But there's a place where you can do that. And I was like, but couldn't you do this just using the environment? But then you can't. It doesn't actually work.
Right. Okay. Mystery solved.
Yeah. Which was a shame, because I thought that'd be a really cool way to sequence break that.
Does it feel like it should be possible within the mechanics?
Yeah, like, probably, but like it must know that you're triggering a sage power to make it happen.
Hmm.
Like there must be I guess it's because of the way you activate that sage power. Anyway, can't get into much specifics about it, but yeah. It's like, I feel like it would have been... Well, the thing is, it would
I can only think you're talking about Riju.
Well, yes, but don't spoil it.
Yeah, I won't say any more than that.
But, like, I feel like it should have been able to activate naturally, but there wouldn't be any reason for you to think to try it. Like, that would just be a thing that you'd only do if you knew that that was a thing that would trigger like that. And also, if you wanted to take that thought to the logical conclusion, it should naturally happen anyway, without you even being involved at all.
Oh, okay. Huh. Weird.
But it doesn't, because the game's programmed to not do that. And even if it did happen to happen naturally, it wouldn't trigger it, because it's not a safe route.
There were a few places with that particular mechanic where it couldn't be done naturally, I seem to remember.
Well, that's why I thought of this one specific one specifically, because...
Specifically.
Because it's in a place where that could happen naturally. Because obviously Riju is related to the desert, where you don't tend to have that happening much.
Okay, yeah.
But yeah, so I went and tried that, and I was like, yep, that doesn't work, it's a shame. But then I'm like, well, so do I now try and sequence break it the way Rob did? Because that is still technically a sequence break. But the trouble is that, like... Incredibly minor spoilers for this one place, I guess, but then it's the one place where there's a heart door. Or the second, I guess, if you don't count the one on the tutorial island.
Oh, yeah. I guess there was. Yeah,
it's the only other place in the game where there's one of those.
Hmm. A test of sort of like almost like the Master Sword.
Yes, it's the Master Sword thing. Equivalent.
Yeah.
But yes, I believe that door is like 10 hearts. But I was thinking, oh, maybe you can try and find a way to sequence break away around that. Like, theoretically, because it's all a sky island, you could, like, build a flying machine to get under it and then, like, ascend through a very precise place to get into that sealed room.
Hmm.
In theory.
How many mandatory things do you have to do, really, in Tears of the Kingdom, right? Is that one of the things that, like, you have to do?
Well, that's the other thing that I haven't tried yet. It's just, like, I haven't tried just going straight to the end.
Just go to the end, yeah, see what happens.
Because that's what I talked about it at the time just after I'd finished it, but that whole sequence, which obviously I can't spoil at all, but like that whole sequence is going to be real weird if you haven't played the whole rest of the game. Like, what's even going to happen?
Maybe it doesn't. Maybe you just get kicked out or something.
Yeah, or there's just a barrier of some kind, I guess. Mm. That would kind of suck, though.
Or you need all the sages for some reason to get through some doors.
But then again, I've seen a speed run of it, and admittedly it clips out of bounds a lot, but they do just go straight to the end, and it does, like, certain parts of that sequence still happen even
certain
in the speed
parts
run
of it. Okay.
So I would be interested to see how that happens if you go down there naturally, or whether it is like where the speed run clips out of bounds, that's like skipping triggers or whatever that would prevent you from getting to that point, but then because you've gone past them, the game like retroactively fixes it or whatever. Because it assumes you could only be there if you already had done all the other stuff.
So it's like the pyramid plus ascend. Is that on your list of breaks to theoretically try?
Well, the
like,
big hole in the roof, yeah. I mean, yeah. I guess you could go up there.
Just get straight to the boss of that section.
Yeah. You could theoretically... Oh, no, I was about to say you could theoretically get to that without Riju, but you need to be able to reveal the temple.
Yeah. So... I thought I ascended into the boss room.
No, you
right?
probably
but,
did.
But then backed out of it rather than going there, because I thought, like, oh no, I've missed some stuff down here. I don't want to go there yet. And then...
I mean, that one's an easy one to, like, not have it trigger until, I guess, the proper elevator arrives.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, maybe that was... Or maybe the boss can't function without with the hole in the floor or something.
Yeah, maybe. But yeah, that's
it's your foot on my quest cable. That's because that's the recharge sound.
It's donging again.
Dong.
So that's what I did. I think I was like, I was going to see about getting into that into the heart door sealed room, but then it's like I also should just go jump down the hole to the end and see what's up. See how that goes. See if I've still got the skill to even manage any of that. Because I just don't, like. If I wanted to open that 10 heart door legitimately, that's like, you know, 40 fucking tries that I'd have to go and do. Well, not 40, I guess.
Maybe slightly more. Less than that.
Well, you start with 3 hearts.
Oh, yeah. But you want a bit of stamina, right?
Well, not if you're only going to test this thing. You can get by without stamina, but you can't not use hearts to open that heart door unless there is a way around it. I'm assuming that it will just prevent you from ascending into that room. It just won't, the ascend targeting won't activate on that area under that place.
Be the easy way to do it, I guess.
Or if you can get in there, there just won't be anything in there that you can interact with to cause anything to happen. Because there's a specific object that you have to interact with at that point. And it might not just be there. So yeah, that's Tears of the Kingdom again. That was the brief bit of that I played. I've continued playing a fair bit of Oxygen Not Included, getting into problems of like being too efficient or being like efficient in ways that take up too much time, which is not efficient in some ways. Like I've now finally got this huge farm of like naturally planted grain, basically, that only grows in cold environments. Because the way this map generated there's basically a layer on the top of the asteroid that's not in space, but it's like the first layer down from the space biome. It was just like really cold, but there's nothing in there except rock, so it's just like cold rock. So if you just carve out rooms and then you can plant the plants that are like cold in there for free, because you can then use the stupid animals that plant the plants naturally, which means they don't require any fertilization or anything. You just plant them in there for free. And because it spans the entire top of the map, you can do this. You can basically plant enough plants to compensate for the fact that they grow 4 times as slow when they're wild planted.
Okay, do you need to like box them in or something? Or
well, yeah, you keep it insulated. So I like... Basically, you can only get into this room via like the pneumatic tube system. Basically, there is like a backup door, but it's locked, so you can't go through it. Just in case the power goes off or something, and someone's stuck in there and they need to get out.
Use the Futurama tubes.
Yes, basically, that's exactly what they are. There's a new feature of those tubes that I haven't used yet, where you can
send mail.
No, if you get through like the you have to get some. I think there's 2 ways to do it. There's certain plants that you can mash, or you get the cow-type creature. But then you can make milk, except the milk isn't really for food. It's for, like... Well, you can feed it to other creatures, so I guess it's food for them. But then you can also refine it into, like, wax, basically. And one of the new abilities of the tube network is you can have a toggle on the stations to apply wax, which makes you go faster.
Okay.
So you can upgrade your tube network to make it faster by having wax on the way in.
Get properly lubed.
Yep.
That's quite funny.
But yeah, I set up that huge cold farm. But like the starting asteroid is having a problem where I've got too much water now. But that's not really a problem. You can just vent it to space at a certain point if I need to. But I'm being too efficient with water, where it's just like I have the infinite sources of water coming out of the geysers, and it's just like, I'm not using it for anything though, so it's just ending up in a huge tank. So I could just vent it to space, it wouldn't even be a problem.
Or detach from the geysers temporarily.
Well, I did turn off one of them temporarily, but except it wasn't the one making the water, it was the one using the water, I guess, because I'm using the cold water to cool down the output of this other geyser for sulfur. Because it comes out as liquid sulfur, and then you have to cool it down. except that's only for that. Basically, my entire base pretty much subsides on just or subsists, I guess, on just sulfur because it's you feed it to both the plants and the animals that manage the plants that make the plants grow better. So it's basically just all sulfur turns into plants and meat.
Okay.
So I have that one singular output of sulfur is almost all the food in my base. Except I've got all these other food sources, like all those grains that I just planted, but that's for space food, for the infinitely preserved food. Oh, I did try the dehydrator as well. Only on one thing to see what happened. And it does indeed preserve it forever.
Okay.
You require plastic to make the packaging.
Right.
But then once you've dehydrated it, and the dehydrator you actually also use as like natural gas, like it's a gas-fired building. But yeah, once you've dehydrated it, it just stays packed forever until you rehydrate it.
How handy.
It's kind of handy, except you can only dehydrate like high-tier foods that you have to make in the gas range. So it's like the third tier of food, basically.
Mm. So
you do need a natural gas source for both the dehydrator and to cook those specific bits of food that you can then dehydrate.
I just dehydrate an apple.
No, you can't dehydrate any of the basic crops. So yeah, I tested that out, but I've now started like the third asteroid, fourth asteroid, I guess, for an actual fourth base because I need to feed a tree.
What would you thinking about the dehydrated food? Like, I don't know, like, what would you dehydrate and then still want to eat? Just as the in its dehydrated form, is there something like
apricots, rice?
What just without making it soft and fluffy again? Just eat the crispy rice.
Oh, you mean eat it dehydrated?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Is there something you can like because wouldn't it sort of like concentrate certain flavors? I guess is it
depends.
Like, could you dehydrate a pizza and just eat essence of pizza? Like,
I don't think so. I don't think that's how that works exactly.
Right, raisins are just grapes, right?
Yeah, dehydrated grapes
and apricots.
But they're not like super dehydrated.
You want the hardcore dehydrated?
Yeah,
fine.
You want it a bit like beef jerky, right? Like, was. Crisp.
I think if it's like a raisin or whatever, you pretty much just want to turn that into a powder after you dehydrated it that much.
Maybe that's what
raisin flavor powder.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking. Yeah, you just dehydrate a steak and then grind it.
Well, yeah, you wouldn't be able to chew it, that's for sure. If you're talking about jerky, but even more dehydrated. Yeah.
And then you sprinkle that dust on your chips.
Yes, clearly. Potatoes well known for being not full of water.
I didn't say you dehydrate your chips. That's like a staple.
That's the bit you don't dehydrate. No. Just the potato.
You eat that fresh.
You pour all the different seasonings onto the potato to rehydrate them. So yeah, the last base that I've currently got to work, because I have like the asteroid that's connected by the teleporter. There's just one dude who lives there now, and he barely has to do anything. He just like occasionally picks up some stuff and shoves it in the teleporter, basically. That's his only job, so he barely needs to be there. And then on like the second asteroid, there's two guys who are still there, and they definitely don't I don't think they even need to be there at all. I think that's more or less fully automated because I built that's the asteroid that has the metal volcanoes. So I built the basically steam engines to siphon off all the heat and then cool down all the metal, and then it just puts the metal in a big pile. So there's like hundreds of tons of metal just sitting there because I'm never going to use that much, but it's automated, so it just keeps coming out. It just keeps going forever. But then in this third base is where I need to feed a tree to get a specific kind of resin in order to make like fancy insulated stuff for the highest tech.
So it's like the Deku tree when you say feed a tree, like just.
Well, it's like a weird.
Shove it in his mustachioed face.
It's a weird carnivorous tree that's more like. Well, the lore implies that it's basically sort of like some kind of weird mutated coral.
Okay.
And I'm not even sure how you feed it because it doesn't actually have any like. Interactive options I assume you just drop the food on the ground near it and it just picks it up and eats it. Which does mean that'll be nice and easy to automate because you just build a like rail that just drops it right there.
If you put a dude near it, will it eat a dude?
It'll hit him.
No.
It doesn't like him. It just punches him. Which is quite annoying when you're trying to build around it. Because at some point, are you going to have to deal with all the resin? Like, it spawns in a room, like in the ruins of a room that has, like, basically a bowl underneath it. So it's obviously implies how you're meant to deal with that.
Hmm.
Have the resin pour off the sides into this bowl area and then pump it up. But the resin itself also is, like, this weird problem because you have to basically, like, cook it off. You have to boil it, and then the steam goes out and it leaves the more concentrated resin behind. But you have to do it within, like, this quite narrow temperature range where it's, like, you have to get it hot enough to boil but not too hot to destroy the resin afterwards.
You're tempering it.
Yeah, pretty much. So, yeah, I haven't dealt with that part of that system yet. I haven't even got to feeding the tree yet. Mainly because that base doesn't have a good food source by itself. I'm having to import food at the moment. Thankfully, only via railgun, not by rocket.
Okay. Is that something teleport guy could do?
No, it's not. Not connected to that teleporter. It's a different planet. Only rockets to this one, or railguns. That's currently what I'm using my railguns for. From home base, it fires food. From the metal asteroid, it fires metal through the railgun system all the way over to this new planet. But yeah, I'm not sure what I'm going to do with that. That planet might have to rely on meat, I guess, because there's some animals there that I might be able to basically harvest for free because they eat a specific plant that doesn't require any fertilizer even when you grow it in a farm.
Mm.
It just needs to be in chlorine, which is slightly inconvenient, but not actually that difficult. So then they might survive on meat, and then I don't know what I'll feed to the tree because I'm not going to be able to make that much food. I might have to just make the railgun system launch the food directly into the tree. Which actually should be quite possible. Just need a targeting beacon to make the railgun shots land in the right place. So yeah, that's option not included. Just
paint a big one on the ground, right?
Not in 2D, I guess.
No, I guess not.
Yes, that's option not included. Realistically, I probably don't need to interact with this tree at all to even finish the game. Because, like, I haven't been to the asteroid that has the, like, temporal tear opener thing on it, but I don't think it needs anything more than, like, radiation. You just need to pump a bunch of radiation into the building, and then it does the thing, and then that opens the tear, and then I guess you still have to fly a rocket into it. Like, you kind of do that in the base game, except you just send a rocket mission to the tear, and that's it. There's no opening phase. But I don't think I would need... I shouldn't even need like hydrogen-fueled rockets to do that because I could refuel at that asteroid, which is way closer to the tear.
Mm.
So yeah, I probably don't need to do any of this. It's just, may as well. Also, I guess there is the third like completion achievement. There's the one for like building the big monument, which I've already done. That's just a resource gathering one. There's going through the tear, and then there's like a third one I don't really remember very well. And I guess there's still a few achievements I don't have. I don't have the achievement for running the nuclear reactor for like 5 days or whatever at maximum strength because I don't think that's even going to be possible without... Well, I get that might be one where you just have to run it for no reason for 5 days. Just vent it to space so that it never overheats and just let it sit there and not actually for any purpose.
Right. I don't know why, but... Maybe it's all this talk about space.
Yeah.
But Startopia just came into my head.
Sure.
Yeah.
And specifically, nothing to do with the actual mechanics of the game, but just that little bit of music that just goes...
Yep, I knew exactly which bit it was going to be.
Not even a Rona. No, it was just that bit of music. Don't know why.
So that was Oni. I played a little bit more of Urbeck, although I'm sort of like I'm on the third map type, the like archipelago or whatever, where it's like small islands, and its special mechanic is like tourism, like tourist beaches,
hyper tourism,
tourist beaches and whatnot. to put along the edges of the islands, and then there's a conflict between like the tourist beaches and like the fisherman villages where you still have to, that's the main way to make food on that map, of course, because there's not enough land for regular farms.
Okay.
So I played a run on that, but like that feels, because the map is quite a lot of water, this is running into the case of like, is this medium-sized map actually big enough? As I said before about the small maps seeming too small, because there's so much water on this medium-sized map, it's like, is this even big enough? And also I think I'm getting, there's less like, that game has a few like bugs that are really inconveniently placed, basically, because like one of the late game goals in one of the branches of victory, like in Civ or whatever, is like happiness. And there's not very many ways you can raise happiness directly. The main way is to like upgrade the houses to like fancier houses. So you almost get into a situation, because it's an average, of course, you're like, maybe I just destroy all these crap houses. Maybe I just get rid of those. But then what if I need those people there? What if I need... Well, the big problem is like, so in, you do kind of need like ship population to be like basic workers.
That's the politically correct term.
Yep.
Like, your ship population sitting around playing video games, not doing any work.
Oh man, yeah, like there's a specific section in the Keir Starmer's manifesto
about the ship population.
Ship workers. Yeah, it's quite inconvenient, because like when you need the happiness to go up, you still
it's convenient, inconvenient. Yeah,
you still need the shit workers. I mean, you can sort of compensate for that by just building a lot more population, I guess. You'd get a lot more better workers as well, but I guess that's fine. But yeah, I was struggling with that. But then, like when you get these late game goals for happiness, there's just like, well, the big one is that like, there's a building, the fire station, that should give a shit ton of happiness, but it's bugged and it just doesn't work. It's meant to give you like some amount of happiness per like 100 population in its zone of influence. So obviously you should just be able to build one of those in a highly densely populated area and get a nice boost to your happiness, but it just gives you zero for some reason. It's just bugged.
Weird. But this whole game's still early access, though, right? Like,
I don't think it is.
Oh, isn't it?
No.
Oh.
And it's also, like... I think the thing about the fire station in particular is that I think the fire station was added in the most recent patch, but that patch was linked to a DLC.
Oh.
So this was, like, the free stuff of the DLC patch. Right. So, yeah, the fact that it still hasn't been fixed is kind of...
That kind of sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of awkward. I don't know if I'm going to be able to finish that run on that map. I might actually have to start that whole map over again on a larger version of it, so I have more space to work with, and then it will make it easier to deal with the happiness situation, because then I can just build extra houses or whatever, because I'll have the space to fit more population in to get those averages up. So is that, and then the main thing I've been playing, I guess, is No Man's Sky, because that had quite a significant update.
Yeah.
What's going on with No Man's Sky?
I mean, I checked in on it for like all of half an hour or something, and then was like, oh my God, I can't remember how any of this game works.
Yep. That's the problem. Because it is very... It doesn't really tell you any of its mechanics, as I've said before on the podcast. It's only because I know them all at this point. I remember that. I remember how this bullshit works. I remember how you can create infinite of basically every material by using oxygen for some reason.
It took me a while. I thought I'd just check in and be like, oh, let's have a look what stations look like now. And it's like, okay, yeah, that the redesign of those makes sense.
Yep.
That's kind of nice. I then went back to my freighter and was like, oh, I should probably just set off a freighter mission.
Yep.
Right? Couldn't remember how to do that. like, which of these random people? Don't I do that at the terminal? Oh, no, I don't do that there. I have to talk to some random guy somewhere.
He's on the terminal next to that terminal.
Well, no, because you have to build terminals.
No,
to
the main terminal, not the.
Yeah, it's in your
control rooms.
Yeah, it's in the control room. You have to go talk to a guy, and it took me a while figure that out. Yeah, I've forgotten how this game works. Like, pretty much completely.
Luckily, I hadn't, because I once again started another new save. I was just like, how quickly can I remember all the stuff? I still, once again, managed to get caught out by the fact that, like, the base building tutorial branch of the mission tree gives you all the stuff.
Right, yes.
Because like, I went to the anomaly and started buying stuff with nanites, and it's like, oh, wait, that unlocks in the base building tutorial.
Yeah, if I just did that, I'd get it for free, but also, that takes a while.
Yeah. So, yeah, the main update, like, people are saying it's quite a significant update, but I'm not sure it's as significant as people are implying, because it's like, it's an overhaul of the graphics more than it is anything else. Because, like, I suppose even the trailer they put out sort of seems to imply that it's like the actual terrain, but it's not. It's like, as far as I can tell, nothing's changed in the actual terrain generation. It's just like the, you know, fog and clouds and water surfaces and that kind of stuff. That's,
floating islands?
I'm not sure about those, because those theoretically could change, I guess, except you can build on them. So, like, maybe you could get away with changing those and just have some people's bases end up floating in midair, because who cares? Because it's not like physics really exists in that world anyway.
Or maybe they're just added. Like, there's just extra bits of land now.
Have some people's bases appear inside them. That's kind of what I was expecting. Because, like, if you were going to change the terrain generation of that game, it wouldn't actually be a problem for people's bases in general, because you can just build the buildings into the terrain and it automatically carves out the space. And there's like always, apart from for the landing pad, I guess, there's no real reason to have a door even on most spaces. You can just stay inside the rooms and that'd be enough. So yeah, I mean, if they do want, I mean, this patch is called Worlds Part 1, so maybe there will be a part 2 where they do something more significant like that. I don't know. But yes, obviously this seems...
Even the name Worlds just implies that it's a sort of like...
update to the worlds, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, like the natural side of the game.
And there is supposedly some like new animals in the randomly generated pool. Although I'm not sure it's like, as far as I can tell, I don't think it's parts. Like, it's not for the procedurally generated animals that are just made of a bunch of parts. It seems like specific animals. Like the weird bug guy, I guess, that is sort of used heavily in the expedition that's related to this patch, which I did also try because I've never done an expedition before.
Right. Yeah. What are they?
Well, they're basically like...
Are they these like the things you have to do at the like big ass terminal at the, in the anomaly? No.
Well, you can access them through a terminal on the anomaly, but
not the really big one that I thought would.
No. Oh,
is that not like that? What? So what is that then? The multiplayer sort of things,
the one, the big terminal right in the middle is basically just multiplayer versions of the missions you get at stations.
Oh, okay.
So it's like big versions of those, I guess.
Those any good?
I've never done one of those.
Okay.
Because I didn't see, I mean, yeah, I don't know why you would really. But yeah, the expositions are more like an actual separate save file. So if you access the exposition from within the anomaly in a game, it basically creates a save file at that point, but it brings in your stuff. Well, not all of your stuff. It brings in like your blueprints, I guess, like your knowledge, and you can choose certain items. Like you assign them into a container, basically, and then that stuff gets put into the save file of the expedition. Okay. So you can bring some stuff with you.
But what kind of stuff would you need to bring?
I guess you could just bring like money or whatever. Well, I guess you can't strictly bring money. You just bring something to sell, I suppose.
Right.
A big stack of whatever you want to sell.
Oh, right. So you even don't start with your
well, I don't know if this is the same in all of the expositions, but this one, when you start it, it is basically as if you're starting a new file.
Okay.
So you spawn on the planet and you go and find your ship or whatever. Except it cuts out a lot of the like repairing stuff part of that process. So you more or less just have to find the ship and then you're pretty much good to go. And also as you progress through like the missions of the expedition, it just gives you a lot of free stuff as well.
Okay.
So it basically makes you progress a lot quicker.
Interesting. So they're like almost self-contained but streamlined mini campaigns.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, interesting. Maybe that. Maybe I could learn how to get back into the game through one of those.
Probably. Although maybe it would also be kind of confusing because sometimes you just get stuff and it's like, unless you're paying full attention, you might even not understand why. Like, and sometimes you'll complete an objective and then a screen pops up where you just upgrade your multi-tool and add slots. It's like, oh, it's giving you that as the unlock for this mission completion. But if you weren't fully paying attention, it's sort of like, suddenly here's this window.
Right. Yeah, which doesn't normally happen.
No, not like that, at least. Especially not for upgrading a thing. Normally you'd have to find the specific upgrade station for that stuff.
Big question, though, is do you keep any of the stuff you've gained through?
Well, that's the thing that I haven't quite worked out yet, because from what I've read is that at the end of the expedition, you can send one of the multi-tools and one of the ships. So, like, whatever multi-tool and ship you have equipped in that save file,
they come back.
You can import it back. But I also read that apparently you can do that at any time during the expedition at the anomaly, so you can potentially send multiple ships and multiple multi-tools back.
Interesting.
But you have to do that while the exposition is in progress, and because I didn't know that, I'd already finished the exposition, so I can only basically do it once with whatever I have at the end.
Oh, okay. It still gives you an opportunity. Okay. Yeah.
Well, it's the other thing that's weird about it is because it's, you go to the terminal in the anomaly, the exposition terminal, to end the exposition, which is then when you supposedly put in, I didn't even see this menu because you can't commit to this without committing to it. Mm. But that's where you supposedly put in the, like, your ship and multi-tool choice or whatever. But when you end the expedition, it gets rid of that save file, and then the stuff that unlocks is just like on your account, basically. Mm. Like, if from any other save file, you just go to that terminal in the anomaly, and then you can get that stuff from that expedition,
okay,
including like the special unlocks, like cosmetics or whatever.
Mm.
But because it's an expedition that's like got community targets, so like the community target in this one is like kill a bunch of stuff, there's like missions that I haven't completed, the optional side missions that are based on the community targets. So if I were to go to that terminal and end the expedition and send the stuff to my save file, because it deletes that save file, I can't then get those things that aren't done yet by the community goals.
Right.
So I kind of just have to leave that save file there for another, like, 6 weeks until this expedition ends and then go.
So unless you deleted it and did it again.
Unless I deleted it and did it again, yeah.
Mm.
So I'm like, well, I can't even get the one ship and one multi-tool I can because I can't close the save file.
How long did this expedition take you? Like, how much game is it? Like,
well, I mean, it depends how efficient you want to be, because, like, obviously you're getting a bunch of free stuff, and because it's, like, this sub-save file, it, like, helps you resist the temptation to, you know, hoard and reserve.
Right.
Like you normally would in the normal game. So you just be like, I'm just going to spend this shit, it doesn't matter.
Right, yeah, because you don't get that stuff back.
Or at least not most of it. Mm. Or, well, apparently only the ships and multi-tools, as far as I know.
Mm.
But yeah, so it does make it a bit more like streamlined. Like, I think the second mission goal unlocks the base computer so you can build a base. But I was like, I just don't need to. There's no reason for me to do that.
I want to spend the time.
Yeah, I don't need to bother doing that. I can just get away with the ship and then the freighter, because like one jump later you get the free freighter because it's the equivalent of a new save file. You still get the freighter fight and you still get the free freighter.
Hmm.
So I was like, I can just live off the freighter and that's fine. Don't need to worry about the base. And it's not like I even needed anything that you would need the base for. Like, I barely even use the stuff inside the freighter version of the base. So it's like, yep, that's fine. You can have a freighter fleet if you want, but even that's kind of pointless.
Yeah, why would you? Seems a bit weird that they don't intentionally just cut that stuff out if it's not.
Well, it's because that would be too much effort. Like, it's a special save file, and there are things that are different, because, like, the whole point of this exposition is, like, every building and every like save beacon or whatever, wherever you land on the planet, there's always the monstrosities come up and then you fight them. So it's a lot about fighting.
Hmm.
So that's what's special about it. But it is otherwise the same game. Like, it is just a new save file with this one special condition, which makes me wonder exactly how it works in the overall context of the game. Like, is it running on a separate server, basically?
Oh.
Is it,
or is it entirely running locally as much as... Because the game mostly runs locally.
Well, sure. But, like, you, obviously, if you see other people, because it's specifically set up for multiplayer, where in some ways you can easily still turn the multiplayer off and it's fine. You can still get through it. But yeah, if you have that turned on, you can see people flying around and you can see other people's bits of bases or whatever left lying about. So it still functions the same as the base game does, but presumably this must be a special, like, shard world that doesn't...
I guess, yeah.
Because you can still scan things and you can still upload the scan for nanites or whatever.
And you keep those nanites?
Well, in this save, I don't know if they go in.
That's kind of the thing. Like if none of it carried back, yeah. Like, why do you need to do it?
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, you only need as much nanites in that save file as you need to buy upgrades, basically, to help you through the missions.
I was kind of into it until you started saying that it is more of just... It's not as streamlined as I was hoping, actually. I think I would have quite liked a very focused... cut down version, like, here's all you need to do.
Well,
all you need for this expedition. Go here, do this thing.
Maybe some of the other expeditions were more like that. I don't know. This just happens to be the one that I've done, which is vaguely a Helldivers reference, basically.
Right.
Because you're flying around and dropping into these planets where there's always monstrosities everywhere. You're always going to be fighting them. They give you the mech, basically. They give you that quite quickly as well.
Does it mech? You can pilot?
Yeah, like a Titanfall mech.
Cool.
And it has an AI mode as well, if you want.
Cool.
So I just had that follow me around most of the time. Except they also... The thing is, they give you a multi-tool with, like, a fully upgraded shotgun attachment, basically. And that's so fucking powerful that it's, like, that's basically the only thing I use the whole time. And then, like, even as you progress through steps in the missions, the base... tier of the multi-tool gets upgraded as well, which obviously affects the base damage.
Sure, yeah.
So I just, like, you just have this one shotgun, and that was pretty much the only weapon I used the whole time. They even give you the other weapons later on in the mission progress. I'm like, why would I want these? The shotgun is just far too good.
So, yeah. Maybe the others were far too good.
Well, sure, but then I would have had to, like, spend the time to rearrange all the modules to get, like, the overpowered bonuses or whatever from the upgraded slots. It's just like, why bother? The save doesn't matter. Don't even waste the time. Just keep doing what works.
Just go.
Although, admittedly, the fact that it now has to sit there for, like, 6 weeks before I can finish this save.
Yeah.
Maybe I shouldn't have been quick.
Can you start a different expedition?
No, as far as I can tell, they're just fully time limited. So, like, once it's done, they go away.
So you haven't got a pool you can pull from.
No, or as far as I can tell, anyway.
Probably why they're so it's such a long time limit, I guess. If it is, because you're making it sound like it's quite lengthy. Actually, if the bulk of the game is in there.
Well, yeah. I mean, it didn't take me like 20 hours or whatever. That's how old that whole save file is.
That's okay. Yeah, not a goer for me then.
Well, that's how long I played the actual save file. So the expedition save file is probably like, I don't know, 7 or something.
Okay, that's still pretty. Pretty tasty.
Yeah. But at least you have you just never stop at any planet you don't have to. No point in scanning any of these creatures. Don't bother with completionism. Just go. Just leave. Don't even land in some system. Just warp straight for them. So yeah, that's No Man's Sky. I'm playing something out of that. Even though I made this new save file, because I was like, I want to experience the new stuff from the start in case it's that different, see what is different. And like the new stations that I haven't seen since the last patch are kind of interesting, but that's not substantially new, really. But I was like, maybe I should just reload my actual save, previous save. I have so many saves on that game, which is funny because you can just look at the save file list and it's like there's 10 of them or something in there of varying lengths. But then, like, you can scroll down and be like, oh, when was this last one, last save? 2016. Oh, yeah, that's the original save. I'm surprised that's even there.
It came out that long.
It came out in 2016, yeah.
Yeah.
And it was a bad game in 2016, obviously.
Mm.
For a certain definition of bad game, I guess. But yeah, I don't know what would even happen. I don't know what would even happen if you loaded a save that old. Because you can kind of tell, because at a certain point up the list, they changed how they made that distinction between what they call survival and normal difficulty.
Right.
Where survival was like how it worked originally, where your inventory was tiny and it sucked. And normal is the much more nice version it is now. It was basically stack size. Like in the original survival mode, the maximum stack size of an inventory slot was like 250.
Okay.
Which really was tiny, because now it's like 9,999.
It depends on the item, right?
Well, sure. Yeah. Obviously, different items had different stack loads, but I meant
some of them still only have 10.
Yes. Right? I meant for like general resources, like carbon or whatever. And that, so, yeah, once they made that decision, you can see in the save file list where it's like, now there's the icon that tells you whether it's normal or survival. So I don't know what would happen if you loaded the save that old. Yeah, but
presumably it would give it survival, right?
Presumably, yeah. But yes, my previous save is like, that might be a save that I can commit to here on going forwards. Like, even if I want to do other expeditions as well, because of the way it will just branch the save, essentially. But it's not like the expedition rewards are linked to any specific save file anyway, so...
Oh, so you could just go to any anomaly on any...
On any save, yeah.
And go like, oh yeah, I see you did this. Your account did this.
Yes. Because I actually started the expedition through the main menu. I didn't even branch it out of my save. Oh, I just clicked on the expedition button and did it from there. Which meant I didn't bring anything extra with me, but it was fine.
Clean.
Yeah. Do it the real way. No cheats. No free shit.
No cheese.
No cheese. So yeah, I might spend a little bit more time going back to that save, and to some extent I do have to relearn that specific save, because it's like, even though I remember how the game works, it's like, what was I doing?
Yeah.
What were my actual goals in the save? Because, oh, I guess the other thing that I have done in this new save that I'd never done before was the settlements.
Oh, okay.
Because in that previous save, I had like the mission of like go to the distress signal, but I never got round to it.
Mm.
So I tried out in this new save the settlement system, which is nothing. There's really nothing to it.
It's a do a thing, wait for some period of time.
Yeah, make a single decision a day.
Yeah.
Although annoyingly, it's not a single decision a day, is it? That's the thing that sucks about that system. It's like, if you wait like 24 hours, so clearly everything is reset and all the time limits have expired, you go in there and it's like, you may need to make your big decision for the day, where it's like, choose what building to build or whatever.
Yeah, or which person to piss off.
Which person to invite to the settlement. Mm. And then you do that, and then whether if it's a building, there will also be like, supply the building the building materials, and then there's like a 2-hour timer on that.
Mm.
But once you've done the big decision, normally it's like, and then an hour or so later, there'll just be, oh, there's another decision, like the minor decisions. For some reason, it doesn't stack them all up, so you can't just do all those at once. It just comes up again at some point, and it's like, hey, there's another decision you also need to make. But it's fine, because you can just teleport to settlements, of course.
Sure. Yeah.
You can just go to any teleporter and then just pop out and be like, make a decision, and then leave again.
Buy, sell.
Yeah, pretty much.
And then buy.
Yep, and then buy. That's No Man's Sky. And I haven't really played that much Dirk as I'd want to.
Yeah, I know. I've not had the opportunity to join you particularly.
Mm.
It's not in a good stretch.
Yeah. And they're putting the Cybertruck in the Rocket League. / Fortnite, obviously.
Yeah, I got a bit confused when I saw the graphics for that, because I immediately thought Rocket League, but then it had the Fortnite wording on it.
Yeah, all the pictures I've seen that claim it's from Fortnite, it looks like Rocket League.
Yeah.
Where it's like, it looks like it's too small to fit in the Fortnite world, because obviously the Rocket League cars look small.
Mm. Smallish.
Smaller. But yeah, it's weird. I don't think I'm actually going to unlock it because they've made a critical mistake if they wanted people to get this, where in order to unlock each individual part, like the wheels and the bodywork and the antennas and whatnot, you have to use them. So you get the wheels from doing like general stuff, but then you have to equip the wheels and then use them for a certain period of time to get the next part. And it's like, well, I'm not going to disrupt my loadout, how my car looks. I don't want to put the shitty soundtrack wheels on a random car.
But you should.
No.
Just build another one. Build one you don't care about and put the shitty Cybertruck wheels on.
I don't care about the Cybertruck enough to bother with that.
Who does?
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure it's fine in Fortnite where it's probably just a thing you find.
Yeah, it's probably
somewhere.
Just another vehicle lying about that's probably bulletproof.
I doubt it. Well, I think I did actually hear someone say that it's actually really bad because the windscreen is so huge and at an angle where anyone above you can just see you.
Oh, no. Right.
That's sort of funny.
I guess the windscreen isn't bulletproof then.
Nope, apparently. Yeah, that's what's happening in Rocket League, I guess. Oh, and that reminds me, one more tiny little thing about Rocket League, because I mentioned it on a podcast ages ago, where they've been going through the process of doing all of the arenas but with grass. And we were speculating whether the summer event where it was the new beach map was going to be beach but grass.
Beach for grass.
And it totally is. They just put grass on that beach somehow.
I mean, I guess they could do like... Not really grass, but I suppose it is a grass.
Yeah, it's a type of grass. Yeah. Seagrass.
But it's just long grass, generally.
Yeah, but they didn't. It's just grass.
It's just grass.
It's like, God damn it. I predicted how lazy they were going to be. It was indeed beach with grass. But they're kind of out of arenas now to the grass. Unless you want to do Aquadome with grass, I guess. That wouldn't make any fucking sense.
They still would.
But they already made shallow Aquadomes. So they've already done their easy knockoff of Aquadome map.
Wasteland with grass?
They've already done that.
Done that?
No, they've already done Barnyard with grass.
What about the stadiums with more grass?
The grass up the walls.
Yeah.
Full grass. Now's the opportunity to bring back the octagon. Octagon, but with grass.
Octagon, yeah.
Space grass.
Just need to make new arenas.
Yep.
Damn it.
Nope. Not new shaped ones, at least.
Well, don't have to be new shapes.
But who cares? Who cares about visuals at this point?
I'm trying to work out how long it's been since I've played Rocket League now. It's been a while.
Yep.
I feel good.
You feel good about it.
I'm still just barely keeping that Xbox 360 controller alive.
Oh, man.
With taping up the cable. I had to replace the tape because it had finally given up. It was like, put the new tape on.
My God.
I actually bought a new controller because they were slightly cheaper on Prime Day. I now have a Shock Blue. New controller.
A Sonic Blue.
Yeah. A Sonic Blue, yeah.
Not the furry one, luckily.
No. Or the Deadpool ass controller.
The bum controller, yeah.
I was genuinely considering just like going to Reddit and being like, people on Reddit, tell me what the best knockoff 360 controller is so I can get one.
Probably the 8-bit dough ones.
I mean, probably. Because it's like, I want a controller that's exactly like that, but they don't sell them any longer.
Yeah, because 8-bit dough will do pretty good wired modern takes, and I think they even do Hall Effect versions of the Xbox controllers now. I was very tempted to buy. They do this receiver that you can plug into the PlayStation 1, and then you can use modern controllers on the PlayStation 1 wirelessly.
Ooh.
Right, nice. So it's just like a Bluetooth receiver.
Kind of, yeah. Mm. And I'm like, that sounds like a pretty good idea, because then that means I could use my PlayStation while Badger's about and not have cables everywhere that he wants to tangle himself in.
8-bit dough is cool.
8-bit dough rock, yeah. I really need to get some of their stuff. I haven't got, well, I say they rock, but they, like, I haven't got any of their stuff. But everyone raves about them. But, they seem like a cool company. They had an anniversary version of their like ultimate controller a year or two ago that was like Japanese calligraphy styled, and it's like, oh, I want that so bad, but it was but it was a limited edition and it had already gone
naturally.
Of course.
Yeah. And that's pretty much the end of this, I guess. That's Dan, what do you want to say about Tears of the Kingdom?
I haven't got anything new to say this week about Ghost Games, I'm afraid. I thought this was going to be a well short one, but we're actually not too bad.
Well, as is traditional, when we have nothing to say, somehow we say a shit ton of stuff.
Yeah. We're the Padmeisters.
Yep.
Yeah. So thank you for listening to our not at all padded, extremely well thought out content.
Go watch some weird sports for the next 2 weeks.
If you can.
I watched archery, and
that's not that weird.
It's not that weird. I mean, it's much shorter than I expect. Like a match, an archery match is quite short. There's like a set is like 6 shots, and
right,
you get two points if you win the set, and you share a point between each other if you draw the set, and it's 1st to 5. So it doesn't take very long.
I feel like that's shorter than I've seen before. Maybe they shortened it.
I watched most of the mountain biking as well. That's kind of fun.
Slightly weirder.
Or the time trial city cycling in the wet. Naturally, people crashed.
It's not fun when it's a time trial, though, because there's only one person to
get fall
over.
You don't get the like Tour de France
you don't get
like,
a huge pile up.
Cascade effect. Yeah. Go watch some weird sports. Watching hockey is quite good fun. I quite like watching the hockey. You didn't even touch the quest that time. And
I think
still
I might have
donging.
Done, possibly. Okay.
Dong your quest.
Yeah. Dong your quest, watch some Olympic sports, play some video games maybe.
And maybe watch the next Half-Life video that will be up on the site channel right now.
Indeed.
Part 7 of Half-Life 2.
With a nicely edited thumbnail, I noticed.
Why, thank you.
Not that they aren't all, but that was particularly made me laugh. So check that one out. Everyone's looking at you. Yeah.
Look at you, Kleiner. Checking me out.
Checking me out. So watch us play some Half-Life, and we'll be back with another sidecast in about 2 weeks' time. So we'll catch you then. Bye.